As Gary mentioned, I'm an assistant project scientist working with Larry Squire here at UCSD, and we've done a number of studies that involve eye movements, and we're trying to investigate what they might tell us about memory. So memory is not just one faculty, but instead it's composed of a number of different faculties or abilities that each depend on different neural substrates. Declarative memory, or conscious memory, relies on the medial temporal lobe, and it supports the capacity for conscious recollection of facts and events. Non-declarative memory is a collection of abilities that can be learned unconsciously and that are expressed through behavior. So, for example, skills and habits underlie our ability to ride a bike or drive a car. Priming or perceptual learning helps us respond or identify a stimulus faster the second time we see it. Simple classical conditioning, including fear conditioning, is responsible for the formation of phobias. And an example of non-associative learning would be something like habituation. So that's the type of learning that underlies your ability to become accustomed to a sound or road noise or something outside of your new house or apartment. There are some examples of experience-dependent behavior where one does not know in the absence of experiment whether the behavior reflects declarative or non-declarative memory and unconscious or unconscious memory. So I'll describe new studies of eye movements, which are influenced by experience, and illustrate the tight link between hippocampus-dependent memory and conscious awareness for what has been learned. Imagine a situation where one studies 120 pictures and is then tested on 240 pictures, half of which are old and half of which are new. And when you're during the test, you're making old new judgments for each picture. As I'll describe, eye movements are different for old pictures versus new pictures. And the question is, what kind of memory is this? We know that priming is occurring, so you can identify old pictures faster than you can identify new pictures. But we also know that each picture is being consciously recognized as old or new. So do eye movements relate to unconscious memory processing or to conscious hippocampus-dependent memory processing? The recognition memory task that I just described depends on the hippocampus. So patients with lesions of the hippocampus are impaired relative to their controls on deciding which pictures are old and which pictures are new. Young adults also participated in the study. The reason they're performing about as well as older controls is that they experience the memory test 24 hours after study, whereas the older adults and that are controls for the memory-impaired patients experience the memory test 5 minutes after study. The eye movements were different depending on whether the picture was novel or the picture was repeated. So we measure eye movements in two different ways. One way, the number of regions sampled. We just measure how many different regions on the photo are sampled by eye movements. The other way we measure eye movements is we just count the number of fixations that are produced during the 5 second time that the image is on the screen. The finding was the same for both young adults and old adults, so each of these groups viewed novel and repeated images differently. The results are the same for the number of fixations measure, but I won't be presenting those results to you today. So next we asked how viewing of old and new images was influenced by one's conscious awareness for what is old and what is new. So in addition to judging, this is just a repetition of the findings you just saw for the older adults, in addition to making an old new judgment for each photo, they also judged how confident they were in their old new decision. So they were indicating if they were maybe sure of their response of their judgment, probably sure of their judgment, or definitely sure of their judgment. And what we found is that only when people were definitely sure of their judgment did they view novel and repeated images differently. It's important to note that the accuracy level increases as the confidence increases. So the finding here is really that people are highly accurate and highly sure of their memory decision. And only in that case do they view old and new images differently. Next, we asked if viewing old and new images differently depended on whether your awareness for what was old or new was correct or incorrect. So we looked at correct trials and incorrect trials. We found that only when participants were correct about whether an image was old or new, did they view old and new images differently. When they're incorrect about their old and new judgment, they viewed old and new images to the same extent. All of these results here are the same for the young adults. So if eye movements were controlled by unconscious memory, there are two places in this data where you could imagine you could see differentiation between old and new viewing. One is when people are guessing about their old and new judgment, so the maybe response for their confidence they were told to use if they had to guess if it was old or new. And so if you're guessing, here's where unconscious memory could potentially play a role if it was controlling eye movements. But even when they're guessing, they don't show a change in eye movements depending on the image's history. The other place in here where there's also an opportunity to see unconscious eye movements was when people were incorrect about their old and new memory decision. So if it's not controlled by conscious memory, it really shouldn't matter if you're correct or incorrect about the judgment. But in this case, it was controlled by conscious memory because here you are where your conscious memory is wrong and you don't show the effect. The patients do not show these findings. We suggest that patients are insufficiently aware of which scenes were new and which scenes were old. And as a result, they did not exhibit differential eye movements when viewing old and new scenes, even when their confidence was very high, albeit quite inaccurate. So accuracy here was low. Or depending on whether they're correct or incorrect in their old new judgments. So in summary, eye movements related to conscious memory of what images were old and what images were new. And in a group of individuals who had impaired conscious memory, impaired declarative memory, they failed to exhibit or to view old and new images differently. One might worry that the link between eye movements and unconscious memory is less likely to be revealed when subjects are engaged in a task with an instructional set to consciously remember the pictures. So in each of the experiment I just told you about, people were told to study the images so that they might be able to recognize them later. That tells people that they're doing a memory experiment, and human beings tend to use their declarative memory at the outset. So we ran an experiment where the entire setup was incidental, and people were not informed that they were performing a memory experiment. In this setup, there are three blocks. Pictures are presented across three blocks, and there are three categories of picture. One is novel pictures. These pictures are new in every block. So new in block one, a different set of pictures, new in block two, and then new in block three. Repeated pictures are presented for the first time in block one, and then repeated in the exact same four in blocks two and three. And then manipulated images are presented first in block one, in the same form in block two, and then in block three, a change or a manipulation has been introduced. In this case, there's a man in the back of the truck in blocks one and two, and then the manipulation is that he is removed from the back of the truck in the last picture. So he's absent here. And manipulations could either be someone or something being added or removed from the picture. The critical thing here is that there's a region where the change occurred. And because we've counterbalanced these images and some people got assigned these images to their repeated condition or these images to their manipulated condition, each image in the experiment has a dedicated critical region or region where a change could occur if that image is assigned to the manipulated condition in that subject. So we can now look at viewing of this changed region in manipulated images and compare that to viewing of a similar but unchanged region in the repeated images. So in an earlier memory experiment that we did, Only people that were aware of that manipulation, so they noticed that there used to be a man in the back of the truck, only those people had eye movements that were drawn to the area that had changed. If it was an image that was repeated from blocks 1, 2, and 3, people did not look in that area. And if it was new, people did not look in that area. So what we did was we just asked people in this experiment, just look at the pictures. We're interested in how people view pictures during full attention, so pay attention to the pictures the entire time they're on the screen. So there's no indication that their memory would be tested. The critical part of this experiment happens in block 3, where the manipulation is introduced. And in this experiment, we actually only use 3 images in block 3. One novel, one repeated, and one manipulated. After the manipulated image, we stop the experiment, and we ask the person if they recognize that there was a manipulation. So we get one data point then per subject in this experiment. So they were asked, was something manipulated in that last picture? And if so, what was it? And people were classified as aware of the manipulation if they answered both of those questions correctly. They were unaware if they denied that a manipulation existed and also could not tell where it was after being told that a manipulation had occurred. And they were classified as an intermediate level of awareness if they could answer one of those 2 questions. We measured the proportion of fixations in the critical region for novel, repeated, and manipulated images in people classified as aware, unaware, or that intermediate case. The finding was that only people who were aware of the change looked more at the changed region than at a matched region. Only people that were aware of the change look at the changed region. People that were unaware or that had an intermediate level of awareness failed to view the changed region any differently. The comparison then within this group is that the control picture is this repeated picture. It's something that's also familiar, but no change has been introduced in the critical region. So here the critical comparison is between these 2 bars. The aware group views the manipulated image differently, but the aware and intermediate groups do not. So thus, even when there's no indication that memory will be tested, it appears that eye movements reflect conscious, declarative knowledge for what has occurred. In summary, eye movements in these paradigms did not betray any form of unconscious memory. Rather, the eye movements reflected conscious, declarative memory for what has occurred, even in the absence of any explicit memory instructions. And these findings support the view that access to awareness is a feature of tasks that depend on the hippocampus. Thank you. Yes, microphone first.
If one could drive consciousness, I mean, it's a bit of a question, right? If consciousness serves eye movements, so quite the other way around, and there may be an interesting sequence task in there that can attempt to disambiguate that question.
Yeah, everyone always wants to know the chicken and the egg here. Is it consciousness for the change that makes your eyes go there, or does the change draw your eyes there and then you become aware of it? So that really hasn't been investigated yet. There have been a few papers that I reviewed that tried to look at the development of this effect over time, and it does occur very quickly within about 500 milliseconds. So they try to use that to argue that this is so quick that it has to, you know, the looking has to precede the consciousness. But I don't see any justification for saying that consciousness can't occur within 500 milliseconds too. So it's hard to know what you'd look for to know what is coming first. Yeah, Andrea?
Do you think that you could...
There's a microphone behind you.
Oh, sorry. I don't
really need it. Do you think that you might get a different effect if you added emotionally laden stimuli in there, here and there? In both the patient population and in normals, ability to report or not?
I would suspect that you would probably see the same effect with emotionally laden stimuli. I think it would kind of, it should transcend different types of stimuli. I know that in some of the stimuli they use for the emotional pictures are kind of graphic and gross and stuff, and so that will draw your eye to it. So I'm sure if you were to change that part of the picture, you might get a more awareness if you're changing this critical emotion-inducing object. But other than that, I mean, if you change some other part of the picture, I'm sure that I think this effect is rather general. As far as the patients go, I think that if as long as you were to use pictures, emotional pictures, I think that would be fine. But I think that as far as faces go, I think eye movements can be affected by brain damage, so you'd have to be careful with what stimulus set you used.
Any intuition on whether the failure to notice the changed pictures is an encoding time effect or a retrieval effect?
Right. We did do an analysis on that. So one of the suggestions is that the people here that are unaware of the change just never look there. And so we did a secondary analysis that equated for prior viewing. So in blocks 1 and 2, we made sure that we're only looking at pictures where people that were later designated as aware and later designated as unaware viewed the critical region to the same degree, and then asked for those images, do you see this awareness effect? And the answer is that you do. So it doesn't seem to depend on them looking there or not looking there. You find the same thing even when you equate how much encoding they've done for that region. Terry?
So in your first result, you showed that subjects to have fewer eye movements when it's a repeated picture. And then you also asked them if it was repeated or not. Mm-hmm. And the question is, if you just look at the eye movements themselves and ask how well could you predict, you know, do the eye movements actually more accurate than the subject's report? You know, make a threshold for eye movements and use that as a way of predicting, you know, whether the brain has registered if it's a novel or not. And is that going to be better or worse than the actual subjective report of the person?
Right. I understand what you're asking. There's a lot of variability in these pictures into how many fixations each one of them bring out. So I think you started with a set of pictures where they all kind of started out with the same amount of viewing. You could look at if you were exhibiting that amount or less than that. We haven't looked at that. Right now, the differences in the amount of viewing from, you know, in all these different types of pictures is just a source of noise. So we try to counterbalance the pictures and test a lot of people to get rid of it. But yeah, that might be something that is worth looking at. Right now, the effect seems to depend on how well your declarative memory is. So if you have very poor declarative memory, you won't exhibit the effect. If you have very good declarative memory, you will exhibit the effect. So
you presented your last experiment as if they were consciously aware. If they were consciously aware, then they looked more at that spot, right? But how do you know the causation doesn't go the other way around, right? Because you looked there a lot, you noticed it. And then if you divided your people out into those that were aware, then clearly they would have looked at it more often because that's the way you divided the people. Does that make sense?
That has to do with which comes first, awareness or looking there?
Yeah, but I don't think you... No, but she divided them based on how they looked on the first two images. I'm saying, what if it's just how much on the third time the image came up, did you look there or not? If you look there a lot, you're more likely to notice a change. Now when you divide people up by did they notice a change or not, then you would definitely get a difference that the people that notice a change would have looked there more. Even if the causation went the other way around.
I think you're just asking to analyze the data in a different order and say, instead of
right.
Here are the aware groups, how did they look? Say, here are the people that looked in the critical region a lot, maybe over a certain threshold. Now, what proportion of those are aware? What proportion of those? Yeah, we haven't looked at that. That may be something that could get at the chicken and the egg problem. Okay.
So you only had 4 patients?
That's right.
So if you had...
Each of the patients was actually tested. They were tested twice. They were tested twice, so we averaged their scores. So it is rather noisy.
Do you think that the result? Do you have any additional data? And do you think the results could potentially change when you had more power in that group?
I don't think it would change with more power. I think what it would change with is if we were able to boost their memory performance. So the work on the patients, the findings with them, what you're seeing here. What you're seeing with the patients is that they have kind of a muted effect. So their accuracy was at about 65% correct, and they had little numerical effects. And so I think what we could do, if we could make an experiment where the people with amnesia could succeed on the memory task, they would show the effect. So I think it's more dependent on giving them a chance to succeed and show that they have declarative memory, then their eye movements would go along with it, rather than a power issue.
Right. And the other issue was whether there was any differences in your group in terms of severity of amnesia or causes for memory problems.
The group was differed. There are three people with just hippocampal amnesia as a result of anoxia, and there was one gentleman that had large medial temporal lobe lesions, so the hippocampus and the surrounding cortex, as a result of virus of herpes encephalitis. And he did much poorer on the memory test. He was actually at chance on the memory test, and his eye movements did not show the numerical effect. So we looked at a kind of a correlational measure to address that type of thing, memory performance and how much they do the old new effect. So there's kind of a positive correlation there, and he was the patient with large medial temporal lobe lesions was down, showing poor performance on both of those measures. Okay, thank you.